nothing to do to save his life, call his wife in. Nothing to say, but what a day, how's your boy been? Nothing to do, it's up to you. I've got nothing to say, but it's okay.
And we are the Nonprofits. If we're the Nonprofits, then I must be Dennis Slube, along with Matt Dillahunty, Russell Glasser,
yes,
and Beth Presswood.
Hey.
And it follows that we're coming to you live from the Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas, on the 20th of August, 2011. And the music would probably be Good Morning by the Beatles. Now, some would say we couldn't do this alone, so it must be that some entity, like a non-profit educational organization, most likely for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state, with a name something like the Atheist Community of Austin, is sponsoring us. And it would have a voicemail at 512-371-2911 and a website at www.atheist-community.org. If anyone wanted to know more, it makes sense that the show itself would broadcast every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time, and that we would want listeners to join the chat room and participate in the show by following directions found at www.nonprofitsradio.com. So all the listeners have to do is sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Woot. Are you... Dennis is back, obviously.
Yay!
I'm over my pneumonia.
Yeah. All of your prayers to kill him off with pneumonia failed in the face of modern science.
Ha!
That's right. Massive horse pills.
And it's Saturday morning, which...
It is.
If this were the 80s, that would mean it was interfering with cartoons. But now there's, like, cartoons on something 24-7.
24-7.
So carry on.
Yeah. What a world. Cartoons delivered right to your house.
So, yeah, we got up bright and early, but not quite as early as our first guest, who's actually in California. We're shifting the time of the show to 10 a.m. Central, 4 hours earlier. So if you used to tune in at whatever time X, just tune in 4 hours earlier and you'll find the show.
Wow.
And some people actually listened, and there's already, you know, people connected to the stream.
It's going to be easier for people with time machines. So yeah. That'll be...
It'll take a few weeks for everybody to get used to this, but yeah. The old method, starting at 2, meant that I pretty much couldn't go anywhere and do anything in the morning because I'd just have to be here to start getting ready around noon or so. And then if the show runs even 2 minutes long by the time I get the podcast uploaded and everything else... the rest of the day shot, except for Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
So, and plus Russell's got to drive, and Dennis has to drive, and so yeah. That's extra time.
Yeah.
So 10 a.m. makes things more workable. But we have a guest this morning who's going to educate all of us on something that I don't know if it's just interesting or amusing.
It's especially interesting to those of us who got directly targeted, but...
Yeah.
It's just a weird story overall.
Russell, go ahead and take this, because Kyle is... Kyle Vanderbeek, by the way. Welcome.
Yay!
We'll just talk about you for 20 minutes.
As we talk... Is he on?
I was enjoying it.
He is on.
Oh, okay.
I had him.
Hi, Kyle.
Down.
Hello, Russell.
We were talking about the David Mabus story last week, and David was, or Dennis, I should say, not this Dennis, was brought down in part by a petition that got the attention of the Montreal police after they had been aggressively ignoring the story for about 2 years, if I've got that right.
I don't know if I've ever been aggressively ignored, but yeah, it did seem possible, that has been the case for quite a while.
So let's see. Anyway, Kyle Vanderbeek here is the guy who started the petition, and we were going to talk a little more about the David Mabus / Dennis Marcuse case. But first, I'd like to lead this off with what I think is the latest news about this from yesterday. The Montreal man who had been wanted by police for allegedly making online death threats against people all over the world appeared in court on Friday to face 16 charges. This is from globalmontreal.com.
16.
16, yes. Two charges were laid against him Wednesday and an additional 14 on Friday. Marcuse has been sent for a 30-day psychological evaluation at Montreal's Pinal Institute and will appear in court again on September 19th.
Excellent.
So I was hoping, Kyle, that you had some more background on David Mabus than we might have already covered before, like maybe a little more history or anything?
Not a ton of history, but if you, I mean, really, I'm sort of the third of three players in this whole tale.
All right.
At least as it's played around this time. I mean, if you really want a ton of the history, you really have to look at Tim Farley's web post.
Yeah, I just read that the other day.
On skeptools.wordpress.com. Tim Farley has been doing the serious legwork as far as gathering forensic evidence for years. And he's got screenshots and server logs, and he kept track of, you know, Excel spreadsheet full of local case numbers and stuff like that been filed over nearly 20 years.
Can we send him for psychiatric evaluations as well?
Yeah, I think that's, I don't know if that's psychotic sort of hoarding or anything like that, but him and William Ryan, I can't remember.
I think it was Rayland Clark or something.
Rayland Clark.
Or I guess, is he in Montreal? It might be Rayon or something.
Yeah.
W.R. Clark.
On the TV news, it's been Rayland. It's basically been a sort of a perfect storm of the three of us. William is the local stakeholder. He was absolutely necessary because one of the great excuses that these local police departments have to give when dealing with internet threats is out of our jurisdiction.
Actually,
we don't have somebody that can talk about it locally.
Remind us about the nature of those internet threats, because even though we've talked about it before, audiences have short memories and some of them might be listening for the first time today.
Certainly. So, going on, if you read some of the postings and from some of the more well-known people on atheists and skeptics on the internet, going all the way back to like 1993, I think is the oldest thing we've found. Somebody by the name Dave Mabus or Dennis Marcuse has been doing things like applying for the million dollar challenge from the JREF with the Nostradamian prophecies.
Did he actually apply?
He applied, and he predicted global thermonuclear war in 1997. So he was officially declared a loser in 1998.
You know, the problem with making a prediction like that is you couldn't actually collect your prize if you're right.
That's the problem. I don't think he understood those rules. But, you know, he apparently applied a couple of times, and that was sort of his entry into the sort of skeptic and atheist world, was that sort of rubbed him the wrong way. Since then, he's been on a bit of a crusade, and he's used pretty much every media. They say that the internet is driven forward by pornography. Well, he's sort of stayed one step behind pornography as far as what media he's used. He started on news groups. He moved forward to email. As soon as web blogs showed up, he figured out how to at least either automate or go really fast at posting this nonsense on blogs. And in the last couple of years, he's just absolutely exploited Twitter. And that's really where I first came. I'm a fairly recently out atheist. Just the past like 6 or 8 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. part of the part that really bothered me is that, you know, the nature of the threats sort of varied a lot. A lot of it was just linking to a forum where he had posted his diatribe. And if you, say, mentioned PZ Myers in a tweet, he would reply to you and PZ Myers with a link to this diatribe that, you know, the whole DM thing is his both his pseudonym and his real name. That's part of there's a Nostradamian quatrain that mentions DM, and also Mabus is a name. It's sort of the harbinger of the end times in the Nostradamian mythos,
which is also how he got to Depeche Mode.
Exactly, Depeche Mode. Like, you would embed a Depeche Mode video, particularly because they apparently did one video atop the performing atop one of the Twin Towers.
Yeah. It's one of those things we kind of talked about before, where the not everybody is who falls for this or follows this route is necessarily, you know, crazy. But the conspiracy theorist mindset is one where you take a bunch of disparate facts and bits of evidence and you piece them together into a story that seems compelling. And if you are particularly adept at this, what you end up doing is seeing these patterns everywhere. So you go read a Nostradamus quatrain and you get, oh, it's this and this, and oh, look, those things connect, so they must, there must be something going on here because I can draw a connection between the two. And the next thing you get is, you know, this mindset that if it wasn't unstable to begin with, it certainly is because you polluted it with so much misinformation. So,
right. If you've ever seen the movie A Beautiful Mind, it's actually a terrible skewed biography of John Nash, but has some very good symbolic representations of this kind of disorder, where he's standing at a board drawing all these lines between things and other things and muttering to himself and just seeing everything as connected and imagining that he's some kind of warrior in the fight against communism somehow.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to think, and sort of one of the revealing things is that you know, these connections tend to be internally consistent. Like, as a system themselves, they're a perfect latticework, and they sort of make sense in a certain way. They don't stand up into any sort of external scrutiny, but they sort of actually do make sense, and you can, the conspiracy mindset can put them together. But you have to imagine what it was like for someone like this, who's already started to make these connections, to realize, oh my God, my initials are DM. Am I being mentioned in prophecy? And I think that sort of thing, where suddenly he sees himself in the middle of it. I don't want to proselytize or guess too much about what his mindset was, but, you know, he seems to have gotten himself involved in the prophecy, and just by the pseudonym he chose and everything else, he seems to think he's part of it.
Well, from what I remember, after having received his crazy messages for years, and maybe having read some of them for the first few years anyway, he stayed obsessed mostly with James Randi for a long time,
yeah.
And he was really into referring back to the Nostradamus prophecies, and he seemed to be under the impression that he was somehow cheated out of the prize money that he should have won.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because, like you said, he was pretty obviously wrong about the war thing. So what do you think was going on there?
I don't know. I think he, well, if he, the two of the biggest targets that that James Randi has had over the years are, of course, Uri Geller, who actually that's just been a sort of a courtroom slap fight for years. Mm-hmm. Between a couple of grown men, and additionally, Randi has spent a lot of time trashing a guy named John Hoag, which, if you were watching the Mabus stuff, you saw that David Mabus switched to using John Hoag followed by a bunch of digits,
yeah,
as his manufactured Twitter handles, and John Hoag is a Nostradamian quote-unquote scholar. Mm. And you'll see him on all the really crappy history history television shows about Nostradamus.
He's usually got like a crocheted hat on and
true college professor fashion sense.
Oh, I see. Yeah, he's got the crazy Nostradamus beard himself.
Yeah, the bohemian kind of. Yeah, I was really wishing that Sylvia Brown would eventually say something about Nostradamus so that David could start using her name as a pseudonym as well. But, you know, obviously he was clearly wrong. My initials are MD, and Nostradamus put it in backwards specifically.
Right.
So it's all about me.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think James Randi just... You know, I mean, I'm basically this apparently the same age as this Marcuse character, and you know, when I think back to when his earliest posts are, like he started to get onto the internet in 1993, and that's when he started intersecting with Randi. Mm-hmm. And if you think of an 18 or 19 year old kid who gets refused, who is certain about his worldview, and then gets refused. $1 million, or at that time I think it was actually $10,000, gets refused the prize. Like that become, Randi became his first and most important target. And then as the JREF grew and things like the Amazing Meeting and other foundations about skepticism and atheism sort of popped up, he seemed to just spread his wings.
Yeah,
and attack all sorts of other people.
It seemed to me, and I don't know the full timeline, but there was a point in time where, for example, Randi didn't deal with religion much at all. And there was one particular Swift Report, the newsletter / bloggy type thing that James Randi's put out for years, where he basically said something to the effect of, hey, I've been avoiding this conversation about religion for years. It's not the focus of the JREF, and that is going to have to pretty much end now, where he started to address the fact that he's an atheist and other atheist voices, were brought forward by that. Now, he since kind of backed off from that a little in that he doesn't want to necessarily associate with atheist organizations, which, is entirely his prerogative. But what it did was it took people who were fans of Randi and skeptics who didn't know about the kind of, the non-believing community and linked the two a little bit, even, So I can see how Dennis eventually branched out from Randi to then targeting Michael Shermer and P.Z. Myers and Richard Dawkins and everybody else as atheism kind of gained popularity, because that becomes kind of a natural enemy, especially if, with the intersection of atheism and skepticism.
Right. Yeah. And I guess one thing we haven't gotten into yet is that at some point these threats, these crazy spam messages at first, turned into very personal and very violent messages against not just a couple of very famous people, but a whole widespread ton of people who happened to wander into his crosshairs. And all of a sudden, this guy they had never heard of was threatening to kill them or something, right?
Yeah, that was the thing that was really, as I've entered skepticism as sort of an observer, that was really the level where I started getting concerned, and that's what made me think about taking a more active step by opening that change.org. That's a plug, by the way, change.org petition, because wording that was a little bit difficult because I wanted to be sympathetic to a guy that is probably, has mental problems and so on. But it was really the sort of just the wild targeting that started to bother me.
Was there a straw that broke the camel's back on this one?
I saw him as a sort of run-of-the-mill troll for quite a while. But then, like, I saw him targeting people like Rise Morgan, who had, interacted with P.Z. Myers. And this is a kid that at the time was either 14 or 15, maybe 15. who had debunked a thing called literally called Miracle Medical Solution that was being sold to people with Crohn's disease, mm-hmm. and it turns out to be chloride bleach.
Awesome.
Yeah, so he did some basic chemistry and brought this to the attention of UK safety authorities and got this product banned. And in the course of this, since this is sort of like consumer protection and skepticism, he of course started interacting with people like PZ, and he's a young atheist as well, as I understand it. He started interacting with PZ and Randy and Shermer, and suddenly this kid's getting the same death threats. You know, he becomes a prime. Jeez. He's not just a reply all target. A couple of times I'd seen Mavis do directed stuff at a kid, and some of the really violent imagery and name calling was directed at women and families. And I was like, this is more than a troll. Yeah. This is a bit too much. He's being indiscriminate in his targets. He's making, young atheists terrified, kids that have maybe just come out of the closet, and you send a tweet to PZ Myers and say, hey, your really angry blog made me think, and now I'm an atheist, and I'm dealing with that with my family. Thanks for the support. And suddenly, you get back, I'm going to cut your head off from some dude on the internet. And that's just like... I was having a Twitter discussion. I'm in the middle of a Twitter discussion with somebody who it's like, we as atheists, as rationalists, we love the marketplace of ideas. We want the war of words and the best idea to stand out and live. But what doesn't belong in that marketplace is threats of violence. And when it got so indiscriminate that everybody who joined the community suddenly had to worry a little bit, I thought about taking action. And then after that, it was William's blog post that just gave me the hint that there's a correct angle to attack this, because you can't, no matter how you, if you go head to head with Dennis Marcuse himself, it's a slap fight. It's people arguing on the internet and nobody wins. But holding authority to task and saying Montreal police, the targeting and wording was absolutely key to make the petition a success. Was, we don't want to tell Dennis to stop, but what we do want to say is, hey, there are laws. Montreal police have an obligation to uphold those laws, and they're being broken. Combine that with William as the local stakeholder, able to file a local police report, and he just happened to be a journalist, so he already had people he could call, and it turned into a perfect storm. We pulled in Tim Farley with the forensics, and it's kind of now, I guess, a matter of internet history.
Nice.
Yeah, one of the nice things about this is that, if you go to skeptools.wordpress.com, you can read how Twitter was critical to this, and partly because the police had a Twitter account as well. And so when messages would come in, for example, the threats against Heather Henderson, people would basically tweet at the police, are you familiar with this? And what would have in other situations gone by with a, well, you're not in our jurisdiction, as soon as William got involved as a journalist, not only, hey, I can let the press know that you're not doing anything, but I'm in your jurisdiction. And because of the way Twitter works, where you can basically retweet to anybody that was involved in this, William became a target. And as soon as, now Kyle set up the petition,
which I'm not sure if we made it clear, but every time somebody signed that petition, and it was what, 3,000 people, or am I off by an order of magnitude?
At the time of closing, it was 4,966.
Yeah, wow. And each one of those signatures generated another email to the police, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because it highlights the sort of difficulty that local police departments are having with technology. Like, they started receiving. I opened it on Tuesday last, and they tweeted to people like Rebecca Watson and other people that said, and saying, please stop sending email. Like, my name, one of the most Googleable names in the world, is Vanderbeek, on the petition. Right. Yep. And they couldn't find me to ask to stop. And I kind of, I you know, this was sort of, it's sort of the slightly cruel part of me that left it sending email for a good chunk of those nearly 5,000 signatures.
And one of the funny things about that is I understand when Dennis Marcuse got wind of the petition, he started spamming the petition, which was also generating emails to the police, which meant he was personally sending death threats to the police.
Yeah, one of the curious features of change.org is that you can't join the discussion on a petition without first signing it, and that's intended as a sort of anti-spam effort. So I was monitoring the petition with help from change.org, and they ended up banning like 6 or 7, maybe 10 different Dennis Marcuse or variations on that accounts. So all the fake signatures on that petition are actually Marcuse himself sending email to the police with, like, out in the open, insults and his huge, I mean, exactly the same rant pattern, unchanged, for at least the first 4 days, his pattern was unchanged. And then it took a curious sudden turn,
right,
Friday evening, and he actually managed to sign up for an account and use it for a couple of hours and issued these sort of almost terrified sounding pseudo apologies. Interestingly enough, using the royal we, yes, either the royal or the he believes he has Confederates in this effort, that he's speaking for a group.
Him and Nostradamus.
Yeah.
But yeah, so to kind of wrap this up, I recommend everybody go over to skeptools.wordpress.com to
and
read.
The link is in the chat transcript.
Yep.
Do we post those still?
Yep.
Okay.
To read more about this, get really good history if you're not familiar with it. The cool thing is, it wasn't so much, I mean, yes, we want dangerous people arrested to make everybody safe. We would like potentially dangerous people investigated to find out whether or not they're a danger.
Right, and crazy people to get the treatment they need.
And that's the key thing.
That's absolutely
right
key,
now,
yeah.
He is undergoing a psychiatric evaluation. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I don't think I would be going out on a limb to say that it's very likely that he will get some treatment, that mm-hmm. something here will happen. Whether or not I can't even guess as to what his condition might be, or whether it's maybe he's right. Maybe we're all just evil. Yeah. But whatever it is,
when the thermonuclear war comes, we'll all be sorry.
Whatever it is, he's at least in a position now where instead of pounding away at the keyboard and sending threats out to a bunch of people, he's actually hopefully getting some help.
I did get to talk to the detective involved who just did amazing work to try and get the police reports from all over and working with the people involved. But I talked to her on Wednesday morning, and as a sort of secondhand account, I can tell you that she just sort of demurely and she giggled a bit and said, yeah, he's not well. And having interviewed him for a couple of hours apparently, and it was pretty clear that that he needed help, and probably for the first time in his whole life he has actually got a shot at getting some help, which
awesome.
Is I think
wow.
a great story.
I really hope, this is probably a pipe dream, but I would really like someday to hear from a treated Dennis Marcuse and have him comment on what was going through his mind at the time. But I mean, again, I doubt that could ever happen.
I hope that we find out that he was never actually a real danger to anybody, that this was bluster coming from somebody who was unstable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that to me seems a much better outcome, even if he's never, you know, I don't know, normalized or whatever. I don't know what the right word is.
I don't want to hear. I would really rather not hear about a police raid that turns up 200 guns or something like that. I just want to skip that whole part of the potential tale and have a guy who needs help getting the help he needs.
Or worse, you know, the bodies in the basement because his mom, you know. I played a clip, and I almost feel bad for doing it, but his mom did that whole he wouldn't hurt a fly thing when she was, you know, called on about this issue. And so I played a clip from Psycho where Norman Bates is as his mother saying, I'm not even going to hurt that fly. I almost felt bad about that, but we really, you know, okay, the kind of harassment is over and the individual is getting help and that's good enough for us. But hey, Kyle, I wanted to thank you a lot for coming on to talk about this morning. I know you had to get up early to do it.
Nah, it's no big deal. Thanks for having me.
And yeah, thanks for doing the petition helped change things from change.org.
This is awesome.
Anybody that says that slacktivism is useless is just dead wrong.
Amen.
I've said that before, I stand corrected.
If you can find the right angle and the right wording and some local stakeholders, you know, you can make a big difference.
And if you can happen. Flood the police's Twitter accounts and emails with...
Hey, you know, email, you know, showing up with a stack of paper signatures has been long accepted practice. Why not do it via email?
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Kyle. We appreciate it.
Thank you all.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. So we've got tons and tons of news bits and stories to get to.
Do we?
I guess. I don't know if somebody else had one they wanted to start with.
I can go.
Go ahead.
Go.
Over on the Friendly Atheist blog, Hemant Mehta this week announced the We Are Atheism campaign launching. And this is sort of a mirror of Dan Savage's It Gets Better for Gay Kids.
Ah.
Hemant says, one of the hardest and most important things we can do as atheists is come out of the closet and let people know what we stand on, where we stand on the God hypothesis. We've seen studies that show that prejudice against atheists decreases as people know or even just think that more of us are out there. We've also seen billboards with messages urging those who are already atheists to make themselves known instead of trying to deconvert people who are religious. Now there's a video campaign with the goal of encouraging more people to speak up and speak out. It's called We Are Atheism. And it looks like the link is weareatheism.com. So there's already a couple of videos where people who are famous or not so famous have come out and made statements in support of atheism and just want to give that all the promotion it deserves.
We're actually going to give it quite a more promotion. I don't know how quickly this is all going to happen, but I want to make sure that we're mentioning it on the TV show.
Okay.
And Russell's actually doing the show tomorrow, so I'm having a day off.
No doubt.
But what I'm going to do is I'm going to record a short video on my own for the site. I think Beth's going to record a short video on her own for the site. And then I'm going to, in 2 weeks, when I'm back in the studio, I'm going to try to get everybody in. So that we can use the TV studio equipment so that people want to record their videos, individual videos can, and that we can record one perhaps as a group.
A group, yeah.
To let people know that not only are we atheists and not only are you not alone at an individual level, but there are organizations out there that you can come and socialize with so that you don't have to feel like you're the one person who has to sit in a corner with their mouth shut as everybody around you is religious. So... we're going to do more to promote weareatheist.com. Let's see. The West Memphis 3 has been released. For those who aren't aware, and I'll keep this really short, people have emailed me for years to talk about this because 18 years ago there was a 16, 17, and 18-year-old who were convicted of torturing and killing three boys in West Memphis, Arkansas. And the boys were found hogtied, and there was suspicion of rape that I don't think ever actually, or I think it was shown that they weren't actually raped. But in any case, it was part of this, like, satanic fervor. The information that I have is messy, which is one of the reasons why I never talked about it on the show. People would email and say, hey, when will you talk about the West Memphis Three? These guys were basically locked up under these ridiculous fears of satanic rituals, and that's, you know, seems to be relevant to the show. And my answer was usually, I've seen the website. I'm passingly familiar with the case details, but I can't make any kind of statement about whether or not these guys are guilty or innocent. I happen to think that they are innocent, but also it wasn't just about satanic ritual accusations, and it wasn't all about religion, and so it wasn't particularly relevant to the show, although it was the kind of thing that I, you know, think we should definitely work towards. You know, let's make sure that innocent people aren't locked up in jail, and certainly not killed. One of them got life, one of them got life plus 20, and one of them got death. This week, they were working towards new trials. I think the overwhelming majority of people and experts now can believe that their three are innocent. And there was DNA evidence that I would have thought would just have exonerated them outright. The DNA evidence found at the scene matched none of them, but it did match the father or stepfather, I forget, of one of the victims and a friend of his. So it seemed that they should just be exonerated. Instead, and I'm not sure on the legal details of all this, they worked out a plea agreement where they ended up pleading no contest to the charges and were then released. So the West Memphis Three are now free. Wikipedia has a pretty good article on this, but there's also the West Memphis Three website, which I had open and closed again. But if you Google West Memphis Three, you'll find out about it. They've now been released. I'm not quite sure the deal on their plea bargain. One of them was not happy with having to say he was guilty when he was innocent. Which a no contest is kind of a guilty plea.
Understand that.
But Damian Echols, who was 18 at the time, they've been in prison for 18 years.
Jeez.
So half of his life has been spent in prison, released a quick statement saying, to all my friends and family, my attorneys and advocates, and to those of you from every corner of this earth who stood beside us these long years, please know that I'll be forever indebted to all of you for helping me to become a free man. Each and every day, I was the beneficiary of acts of kindness and humanity from people of all walks of life, of all ages, nationalities, religions, and political persuasions. The enormity of the support Laurie and I received throughout this struggle is humbling. I've now spent half my life on death row. It's a torturous environment that no human being should have to endure, and it needed to end. I'm innocent, as are Jason and Jesse, but I made this decision because I did not want to spend another day of my life behind those bars. I want to live and to continue to fight for innocence. Sometimes justice is neither pretty nor is it perfect, but it was important to take this opportunity to be free. And he's moving forward with, you know, talk about other innocent people on death row, which we suspect has happened in Texas at least once in recent memory, where we have actually executed someone who, from my point of view, any reasonable look at the evidence would show that they did not have the information needed to convict this person, let alone kill him. And while it isn't necessarily tied to atheism, who gives a shit? Because it's clear some of our fans of the show have discovered that we're just political liberals who only want to talk about our own issues and we don't care about atheism. So I'll do it today. What the hell? Now, my position on the death penalty has changed quite a bit over the past decade or so. You know, as a fundamentalist Christian, it's the death penalty. It's right there, in the Bible. And it changed a little to, I certainly think that there are crimes that somebody could commit where it would be just for them to then be put to death. My problem became one of practicality, where the system is such that I don't see how we can ever, apart from like extreme circumstances where there's, you know, a confession and a bunch of witnesses and, you know, the individual is clearly, clearly guilty.
Yeah, and it's on video. Yeah. You know,
outside of that, the risk is just too high that we could be wrong. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why we would ever take that risk. And when there is leeway in sentencing, we know the evidence shows that some groups, particularly blacks, are more likely to be sentenced to death than other groups. And if you're going to have a penalty and not a and it's a penalty, I mean, it's even unfair, I think, to just call this a penalty. If you're going to kill people based on crimes, then you need to have the absolute highest standards of evidence. Mm-hmm. You need to have conviction beyond any doubt. You need to apply that equally. And it's the sort of thing that I think, even under those circumstances, should probably be used extremely sparingly, because yes, nothing you do is going to make up for what the people did. Even killing them isn't going to make up for that.
Oh, sure.
So,
how did you feel about Osama bin Laden, by the way?
Couldn't have cared less.
Same here, although, you know, it's difficult to square that with the principles you're talking about. That's like perhaps the most extreme case possible.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, first of all, he didn't get a death sentence.
Well,
he was killed in a military action.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is different. It would have been probably better to ask how I felt about Saddam Hussein, who was executed by his own people. But I'm far from settled on all of this. My gut is, by and large, through the legal system, it's just entirely too dangerous for us to run around relying on 12 people who are not experts. We know there's jury coercion. We know that there are prosecutorial mistakes. We know that there are mistakes on the part of the defense. The system is not one that I'm comfortable with the death penalty.
It seems to me that when I talk to advocates of the death penalty, there's a fundamental difference of opinion, which I think comes down to the concept in clinical tests of type 1 and type 2 errors, where type 1 errors are false positives and type 2 errors are false negatives. So if you're diagnosing somebody with a disease and you make a type 1 error, you decide that they have it when they actually don't. And in the case of the death penalty, a type 1 error means that you sentence someone to death who doesn't deserve it. And a type 2 error means you let someone off, or you let them live life in prison when they should have been killed. And I think where you and I are probably coming from is that if there is a significant amount of type 1 errors, then it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Whereas people who strongly advocate the death penalty, particularly a lot of lawmakers and both our last two governors in Texas, would perhaps argue that it's worth making a number of mistakes as long as you don't let any bad guys off.
Yeah, and I find that to be absolutely repugnant.
There's like a recent story where Rick Perry might have condemned a guy to die who was pretty clearly innocent on the evidence, but I'd have to look that up to remind myself.
Yeah, and that's the same one I was referencing. I just don't remember the name. But anyway, you know, political moral positions aside, the West Memphis Three are free. And you can find out more information about that online. The where's my other story? It's so cool. I lost it. So I'll do it from memory. I don't need to cite any source for this. The governor of the state of Texas is a fucking moron.
Okay.
And he's running
I'll
for
have
president.
To agree. Of course.
I won't even. We'll set aside his college transcripts. In a talk the other day, he's standing there next to a kid who asks him a question about science education.
Evolution.
And evolution in particular. And, of course, our governor doesn't believe in evolution, as most people who look really unevolved.
But he does a nice tap dance.
And he says, in Texas, we teach creationism and evolution in our public schools.
That's news to those of us who have been paying attention to these school board hearings year after year after year.
I'm pretty sure the governor of the state of Texas just tried to claim that we're breaking the law in Texas.
Yeah.
And that he's in favor of it.
Yeah.
His mother,
he's done this before.
The kid's mother tried to get him a follow-up question, but the governor just, as any politician would, put his hands on the kid's shoulder and said, because I think you're smart enough to know the difference, or tell which one's true. I think you're smart enough to figure out which one's true. Actually, the kid probably is. Unfortunately, the governor is not, and the governor is also not familiar with the fact that teaching creationism in public schools is a violation of the law. And in fact, despite his claims, Texas public schools do not, as a matter of course, teach creationism.
Well, as a matter of policy.
Yes, and creationism and evolution. However, we know that it happens.
Yes.
Especially in the rural areas.
As a matter of fact, one of the things that I was most surprised by when I was getting ready to go to the 2003 school board hearing was that there was no point saying anything against creationism, because even the people who were trying to undermine the science in the books wouldn't say teach creationism. That's what the whole intelligent design thing, or later the teach the controversy fuzziness, is all about.
Well, it's nice that the governor of Texas running for president gives a shout out to people who break the law. That's great. Thanks.
So, he basically said evolution's a theory that's out there, which I found really just kind of funny. It's a theory that's out there. And then in Texas,
so's gravity.
We teach creationism and evolution. No, we don't. And this is, you know, people have asked, you know, I went off on Ron Paul the other day, just briefly. Ron Paul, who also, by the way, does not accept evolution.
Uh-huh.
Ron Paul, by the way, not getting my vote.
Right.
Anybody, I know there are others, perhaps even within the atheist community of Austin, who would be voting for Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
That's their prerogative. I haven't even picked who I'm going to vote for yet. But when candidates come out and say that they don't accept evolution, that's one really strong indication that I don't trust their judgment.
Right.
When we go beyond that to matters of church-state separation, and the whole states' rights issue that, you know, libertarians are tied up with. And by the way, I'm not even sure Ron Paul qualifies as a libertarian anymore. I mean, he's been running as a Republican, but when in the name of liberty he makes some of the statements that he's recently made about reproductive rights, because he's not only... Wait, I'm being asked. Here you go.
Passing off to the expert.
Ron Paul hates government. He wants government to be so small that he can wrap it up, shove it in a woman's vagina, and up into her uterus. And that's the only place he seems to want fucking government.
What a metaphor.
Wow.
Okay. That's the girl I'm marrying.
Is that better or worse than drowning it in a bathtub?
But yeah, it's true. I posted a link to that. I know that. I imagine there's probably people listening to the podcast right now who are getting ready to write in and tell me how wrong I am about Ron Paul. Don't bother. I'm not replying. In any case, I can pick on every one of the candidates, including our current president, who's the presumptive Democratic nominee, I would guess, for failing to live up to his campaign promises regarding the faith-based initiatives and other stuff. I am completely and utterly disappointed with every candidate that I'm aware of, and if there's a candidate that I would be happy with, they have no chance of winning at this point.
Of course.
Right.
So it will come down to figuring out who's
least disappointed.
Yeah, it will come down, I'm sure, as it usually does for me, to find the one whose views are most in line with mine on a weighted scale.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that are more important than others. And I'm not a financial expert, so when it comes to fixing the economy, I think they're all similarly clueless, and I'm not convinced that any of them know any more than I do. But when it comes to rights issues and things that go, I personally agree. Somebody suggested that Neil deGrasse Tyson should run for president.
He's not gonna, and he wouldn't win.
I don't think he can win.
But it would be awesome.
But he'd get my vote.
Yeah, he doesn't have any experience in that sort of thing.
He's one of a handful of people off the top of my head who I think could probably get my vote really easily. One of the best, I was going to say one of the best spokespersons for science, but he's just one of the best spokespersons, period.
But isn't he planning to helm a new TV show?
He is. It's not a new TV show.
We mentioned it last week, didn't we?
I'm not sure. I think we did.
Maybe we didn't.
I don't know. They're redoing Cosmos.
Yeah.
And if it was anybody other than Neil, I would be pissed.
Uh-huh.
Which tells you, you know, I mean, that's just how good he is.
Yeah, I mean, just watching that clip on real time.
I was watching that whole show when it aired.
Yeah. All right, who's got the next news bit?
Also on the abortion subject. Let's see. There was an event called the Summer of Mercy recently.
Uh-oh.
Which, you know, yeah, whenever you hear these nice sounding code names, you know that it's newspeak for something terrifying.
For something completely the opposite. Yes.
This comes from rhrealitycheck.org, somebody's blog, named Erin Mattson from the National Organization for Women. She says that for those who don't know, the term Summer of Mercy is laden with awful history, referring to a time in 1991 when Operation Rescue shut down the late Dr. George Tiller's clinic in Wichita, Kansas for weeks on end. Watching video footage from those days, you can see anti-abortion rights extremists screaming and crawling on all fours through the street, culminating in a few thousand arrests. As a friend from Kansas recently told me, it was hell. Scott Roeder, the man convicted of murdering Dr. George Tiller, explained during his trial that while he did not attend the original Summer of Mercy, it did make him more aware of Dr. Tiller. So when they announced Summer of Mercy 2.0...
Oh, great.
Abortion rights and reproductive justice activists around the country took Operation Rescue's threatened actions very seriously. Grassroots activists and organizations poured their time, resources, and hearts into supporting a summer celebration of choice, taking place on Sunday, July 31st through Monday, August 8th, declared by Dr. Leroy Carhart. And the results were that from about 7 o'clock every morning to 10 o'clock or later every night, activists from 18 states stood out in 100-degree heat, intense pouring rain, and everything in between to stand with Dr. Carhart, who was the guy that they were going after, his excellent staff, and the women they serve with dignity, compassion, and respect. At many points during those 9 days, we outnumbered the antis. Members of the community kept stopping by with donuts, drinks, and thank yous for our service. There was no violence, the clinic stayed open, and we did a great job representing the pro-choice majority in this country in the face of an extreme onslaught of misinformation, lies, and hatred.
Awesome.
Yeah, Yay. That's great. And Dr. Leroy Carhart is a hero.
Mm-hmm.
What he does is performs late-term abortions, which are not elective abortions. They are because something has gone very wrong with a pregnancy.
Right. These are in the save a life category without exception, or?
Well, generally it's more extreme fetal defect, like babies that have no brains, babies that have 0% chance of living, and the woman does not want to go through with the last 2, 3, 4 months.
And yet crazy people will still want to kill you if you terminate.
Yes, they think you should just go. They think you should do prenatal hospice, which is stay pregnant and just know that your baby's going to die and that it's probably
in front of your
suffering.
Eyes.
It's probably suffering in the womb and it's going to suffer when it comes out.
Wow. Like, raise my afterbirth. Here, you know.
Okay, so we've actually gone almost the whole hour. And I have a whole bunch more news stories, but there's one that I'm going to touch on, even though we're not going to have time to get into it fully, and I'll try and get the link out.
Good touch.
It's over at Mother Jones, and you can do a search. The title of the story is Horror Stories from Tough Love Teen Homes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I read that.
I'm gonna read the first two paragraphs real quick, or skim the first two paragraphs for you. You can read the rest of the article, and then I've got a couple comments to make on this. One day last November, a group of teenage girls dressed in long khaki skirts and modest blouses stepped onto the stage at Independent Fundamental Baptist Church in Maryland, where Jeannie Marie, a military spouse who asked that her last name not be used, attended services with her family. The young women, visitors from a Missouri girls' home called New Beginnings Ministries, sang old-time hymns, recited scripture, and gave tearful testimonies about their journeys out of lives of sin. Headmaster Bill McNamara spoke too, depicting the home as a place where girls could get on track academically, restore broken relationships, and learn to walk with God. New Beginnings describes itself as a character-building facility for troubled teens, and what Jeannie Marie heard in church that day was that this might be a place for her daughter to heal. While jogging earlier that year, the 17-year-old, whom I'll call Roxy, had been pulled into a vehicle and assaulted by a group of men. Since then, she'd begun acting up at home as well as sneaking out and drinking. 2 weeks after seeing the girls in church, Jeannie Marie and her husband left Roxy in McNamara's care with the promise that she would receive counseling twice a week and stay at New Beginnings no longer than 2 months. It sounded like a discipleship program, Jeannie Marie recalls, a safe place where a daughter can go to have time alone to find God in her direction. As it turns out, this is a... This is just stupid, brutal abuse in the name of religion. I'd like to point out that from the get-go, I didn't have to get any further than the second paragraph in order to find the first problem. The first problem isn't New Beginnings, even though that's a horrible thing. And please go read the rest of the article on this because it's shocking what they're doing. The first problem is their parents. And I don't completely blame them because they have been brainwashed by religion to think like this, but mm-hmm. It's something we need to correct. Because your 17-year-old daughter was pulled into a car and assaulted by guys and started acting up afterwards, and you think she just needs to go and find God at a retreat. You need to get your daughter some counseling by a real fucking professional. And you need to not ship your daughter away to have somebody else fix her problems after she's been the victim of an assault like this. What goes through people's head? I don't even have any kids, and I know this. I'm not a psychiatrist, and I know this. How the things that people do when I realize these are desperate parents who are dealing with the daughter who's acting up and is difficult. And I understand that they just hit a wall of frustration.
Yeah, but there's a voice of authority promising a solution.
Yes. This is the danger of religion. Not only did this girl not get the help that she really needed, in part because her parents didn't know any better, in part because her parents had been led to believe that the church can fix problems, which is a damned lie. Mm-hmm. They can disguise problems. They can, through draconian measures...
They can repress
problems. Yeah, repress the problems and force people to act in a different way. And they can brutalize teenagers and turn them into submissive little robots.
Really good at that.
But... Her daughter needed help, and that's not what was provided.
And she got torture. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the big point about this story is that because these camps and clinics and whatever call themselves faith-based, they do not get the same kinds of regulation.
Right.
You can't even investigate in some cases.
Yeah, and do anything you want.
Yeah. It's, and by the way, it's our religious right to... you know, spare the rod, spoil the child. There's that other story from this week where, you know, a family basically beat their kid to death.
Right.
Because of a Christian parenting book that gave instructions pretty much on how to do it.
Yeah. And there's 250,000 copies out there.
Yeah. Lots and lots of bad news. Lots and lots of atrocity. But we've got to wrap this up. And there's various bits of good news. United Coalition of Reason. United Coalition of Reason is going to get the billboard things up in Arkansas, but they're going to have to pay insurance money to do so, which I think is appalling.
Yeah,
but at least the message is going to get out there. Hemet Mehta from Friendly Atheists was right on the money when he said this is basically a big announcement saying, hey, Christians, go ahead and, you know, deface these signs and cause damage because the atheists are going to have to pay for it. But at least the signs are going up.
Mm-hmm.
And the other kind of good bit of news is that there's a new podcast in the world. The woman to my right here put together Godless Bitches. You can go to godlessbitches.podbean.com.
Awesome.
There's also a Facebook page. Last Monday, we recorded the first episode with Beth, Jen Peoples, Tracy Harris. It's a look at feminism from a secular perspective. She's got big plans for other guests on in the future. I don't know. Are you doing one Monday night? Yes, she's doing another episode. Cool. Monday night.
I did listen to the first episode. Good job, guys. Ladies.
Yay. Yeah.
Oh, you're going to hell for that.
No, you seriously. Excellent job, and I think that sort of topic should receive a lot of attention.
And hopefully it'll raise other people's consciousness and not just mine. Because I sit in here manning the soundboard and doing the technical stuff. And let me tell you, it was hard to stay quiet.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I wanted to just instinctively, I got to chime in. Oh, I could say this. Oh, I need to chime in here. Oh, I got to say this. Turns out, no, I really don't have to chime in. And
they got it under control.
Every time I was getting ready to say something, one of the three of them would say it. And then they would say something else that I hadn't thought of in a way I hadn't thought about it.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to sit in here week after week and just listen and learn. And hopefully other people will do that as well. So that's it for today on the much earlier podcast. We are going to try to continue this at 10 a.m. every Saturday. It's 10 a.m. Central, 4 hours earlier than it used to be. Hopefully, you know, people won't have to get up too early or stay too late, but mm-hmm. this is what we have to do to make our lives workable. Close us out, Mr. Dennis.
All right. Well, since we're done, the show must be over. But Dennis Lube, Matt Dillahunty.
Yeah.
Russell Glasser.
Arrivederci.
And Beth Presswood.
Bye.
Will most likely be back in how many weeks? In 1 week with another episode, in which case you'll have to listen to Good Morning, Good Morning by the Beatles until then.
Nothing to do to save his life, call his wife in. Nothing to say but what a day, how's your boy been? Nothing to do, it's up to you. I've got nothing to say, but it's okay. Good morning.